Those are limitations.
Okay, good morning. Final day of the board week. And we're going to start with post-implementation review of IFRS 3. Mariela.
Thank you very much, Hans. Okay, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We last met in July, and we started the conversations about the post-implementation review on IFRS 3, business combinations, and at that board meeting, the board tentatively agreed on the scope of the review. The scope was going to be the whole business combinations project, IFRS 3 2004, IFRS 3 2008, and the amendments done to other standards. And in that meeting also, the board agreed on the proposed consultation activities that the staff was going to undertake during the following months. And we basically want to discuss with you what we have done, what we have heard, and we would like also your input on and feedback on the questions that we will need to include in the request for information. So what we have done since we last met, we have talked to different, a wide range of constituents, users, preparers, national standard setters, regulators, accounting firms, balancing specialists, and we have also met with internal IFRS foundation bodies, such as the Interpretations Committee in September. We have also met with the Advisory Council in October. So we have gathered input from all of those constituents, and we have summarized this input in paper 13A. And what we have done as well is we have classified this input into two broad categories. The first one are issues dealing with the usefulness of the information that the standard provides. So those issues are more conceptual in nature. And a second broad category is practical implementation issues. And after having done this classification, we have also assigned to those issues a degree of relevance, and we have provided a rationale for that degree of relevance. And this has helped us decide which questions the staff think should be included, and the questions and the areas that should be included in the request for information. And the board has a tentative set of questions in paper 13B. So for the matters that we have assessed to have a low relevance, we are not including any questions in the request for information. For those issues that have been assessed with a medium degree of relevance, two of those areas are covered by a specific question in paper 13B. And there is also a generic question that aims to cover any matters that we have not captured with a specific individual question, and all other matters or issues that are relevant and high relevant, we have assigned an individual question in the paper 13B. As expected, the staff is not surprised. The individual questions in agenda paper 13B touch on the areas that represented the main changes brought by the business combinations project on the business combinations accounting, with one major exception, which is pooling of interest, the removal of this method. We haven't heard concerns from constituents that this method provides superior information than the attribution method. So this is the main change brought by IFRS 2004, but we haven't heard any concerns about that. So the purpose of this meeting, as we were saying before, is to gather your input and on whether you agree on the areas that we have assessed to be highly relevant for this review, and specifically on the questions that we have drafted in paper 13B. And I'm concerned with the timing, and that's why I'm offering to provide you a description of the main inputs gathered for each of these high relevant matters identified, but I'm also concerned of the timing of this meeting, and if you do have questions, then maybe I address them these questions. If not, we can maybe start the conversation right now on paper 13B.
Well, thank you. I think it's a good paper, Mariela. I think
you have identified through the gathering of information all the areas which are susceptible of being discussed. I think that in asking people who respond to the questionnaire to describe their background and experience, which is in question 4, paragraph 4 of agenda paper 13B, and the first question, I think it would be important to know whether the respondent has experience with new accounting for business acquisitions, i.e. post the review of IFRS 3 or before. Because some people might be tempted to respond, whereas they have no experience with the recent business combination dealt with under the new standard. So I think it's important that you distinguish on what basis they do respond to the question.
How are you going to use that information, though? So if somebody puts on the top of the questionnaire, no, I haven't got direct experience, but, you know, I've thought about it a lot, and I've looked through the standard. I mean, you're going to discount what they say? It seemed a very odd question to me.
I think it would be important to know whether people respond on the basis of a theoretical analysis, having thought about the issue, or a practical experience in implementing the standard. It's quite a different perspective, I guess. If you are an academic, you might say, I love this standard, it's wonderful, theoretically it's beautiful, it's perfect, but never implemented it in practice, so you cannot speak about
it. An academic would never say that.
You can guess, yes, never. You can guess. Whereas someone with a preparer might not have really given a lot of intellectual analysis of it, but he may find it quite difficult and expensive, and the cost-benefit might not be there from the perspective of a preparer, and maybe a user as a third perspective. So to know on what basis people make the assessment and give us their feedback, I think is very important.
I just thought it might put some people off from commenting altogether. You look at that question and say, I haven't got practical experience, maybe I shouldn't be answering this.
Don't you think the question one quoted this already? Because
totally, but
just a compliment. I understand your concern, but I think you are a little bit maybe ahead. You are already in the analysis process.
No. I just want when you have a respondent describing on what basis, which is question one, is responding your background, basis, and experience. My point was, is your experience based on having done a business combination 10 years ago under the old standard, or having done a business combination recently and having experienced the new way to account for it? If I don't know that, I will be less well placed to understand what are his points. Patricia?
On 13A, you ranked pooling of interest as well, people didn't raise the issue, but you have lots and lots of issues with allocation of purchase price on fair value and intangibles and goodwill. Isn't that just attacking purchase accounting? And if you're not doing purchase accounting, the alternative is pooling? And isn't it just another way to come at that?
No, the acquisition method was not attacked by those comments. What happened is that many users, for example, they find that the separation of intangibles from goodwill or the evaluation of those assets and liabilities at fair value are exercises that are highly sentimental and not objective. And as a result of this, then sometimes the information that is derived from those exercises is not as useful as one might think. So it's not an attack to the acquisition method per se, but it's more the exercise of going through those evaluations and identifying those intangibles, the recognition of those intangibles, the evaluation of those intangibles is assessed as being highly subjective, and there is not much information that they can have to assess the underlying rationale that management went through when doing those decisions. So,
and pooling of interest is the business combination and the common control. And here, you know, the answer says, you know, the response to this matter has been minimal.
Yes.
And, but at the same time, there's strong call, we should have a separate project. You know, when we already decide, we will have a separate project on business combination and the common control. or not?
Well, we have, because you had board papers a couple of months ago on it. We've actually started the research project. It's tentatively scheduled for December to come back again, but you've actually already had the first paper. So it's there, and that's where we're actually having a look at that, and I don't think there's much merit in asking too many questions from the RFI on this, because of the work we're doing.
Mary?
Probably more on agenda paper 13B than A. I had some concern about the overall direction or messaging of the questions, because when I read through them, it felt like we were saying, here are all the major decisions we made and when we looked at this most recently. Do you think we reached the right conclusion, and do you want us to reconsider it, you know, having had some experience in practice? And to me, I don't think we want to use a post-issuance review to say, let's reconsider the entire project, as opposed to maybe stepping back a bit more and saying, here were our objectives of the areas we targeted for improvement. Do you agree, having had experience with the standard in practice, that those were realized? Are there any unexpected consequences, slash problems? And then say, you know, what if any implications are there for our agenda priorities? Because I think by walking through all the major changes that we made and, you know, giving a recap and asking questions about it in this way, we seem to be suggesting that we're going to put this back on the agenda to address all the problems, you know, all the issues raised. And that to me just seems to be setting expectations that we won't meet and it'll become a problem later on. So I think I understand.
You would like the questions to be much more general.
Yeah, more like, here are the objectives. Do you think we realize them? Are there any unexpected consequences? You know, do you think there are matters arising out of this that should be a priority to consider in 2015? Because this feels like a, should we redo the standard series of questions?
So can I just challenge that and ask you a question? To me, the most important part of this undertaking deals with the disclosures that come out of business combination. The recognition and measurement techniques, I guess, unlike Pat McConnell, I disagree. I don't think they're being assailed. I think they're pretty well ingrained, and I don't think we're going to change them. But I think what is most important, obviously, is the information you get about a business combination. So, to your point, Mary, do you think question 8 is going too deep or too, I thought it was right on the mark. It's just basically saying IFRS 3 requires information to be disclosed. Question 1, what other information is needed to properly understand the effect of the acquisition on the group? And to me, that's pretty bland.
Well, you know, to me, it's, you know, when we say, and partly this is wording, but I think it's the overall messaging, what other information do you need? That implies if you tell us what it is, we'll do it, as opposed to, is there other...
Well, we do lay out the kind of information that investors suggested would be useful in paper 13A, in actually some depth, and I think they're spot on. So, for example, many times all you see is asset liabilities, you know, that were acquired, but in some cases it's quite useful to know, were they payables, were they pension liabilities, were they tax liabilities, you know, with their long-term debt. Mm-hmm. And that's basically absent from a lot of disclosures from the notes, as well as pro forma information, let's say on an interim basis. So, to my mind, those are real valid concerns that should be considered going forward.
And I guess my question is, so when we get the responses to this, you know, let's say with that concern of yours in mind, what are we going to do? Are we then going to immediately put this project on our agenda to say, let's respond to those?
What you're missing is the context. You've just been given the question. We lay out very clearly in each RFI what the expectations and plans are for post-implementation review. And I know, because we've had to say this over and over every meeting, we talk about this for the last one as well. There is absolutely no expectation that any outcome will lead immediately to any new standard. The only thing we might... And I take your point certainly about the wording implying that, well, we might look at this and so on. I think that we're not fundamentally questioning the standard. We're saying, is there anything that might have got in the way of operationalising it as smoothly or as we'd want to? So what's important is the context that Mariella will add to the RFI, setting out the expectations, and then probably a little lead into each of the questions, outlining what we've heard. And, you know, because I think there's a little bit of tension. We're not saying, well, we're going to get rid of expensing of acquisition costs. We're saying it relies on the definition of the business, or so should we tidy that up, or should we attack more fundamentally the accounting differential between those? So you're missing a bit of the context, unfortunately.
I think context would help, but I think it's very important in communication about this. Say things like, I presume that any major messages that come out of this would be captured and fed into our 2015 agenda consultation. And I say that in part reflecting on the follow-up of the responses, of the input we collected in the analysis we did in the PIR for IFRS 8, because that seemed to have generated a number of issues that jumped to the head of the queue in terms of the interpretation committee agenda and some of our limited scope amendments. And we seem to have said, having done this process and come up with these issues, we prioritize them, but we still, have picked up about half a dozen that we're moving forward in one way or another. And I'm just wondering about what messages we're sending. So that's my background. You're telling me that context will help. That's good in that, I think that's responsive, but I just want to be clear on messaging.
Gary?
Thank you. By the way, I think the questions that you've got here in the subject are right on in terms of what we should be inquiring about. But before I ask my questions, they might vary depending on this answer. In terms of moving this, are you going to do this by phone interview? Is this going to be a web page form? How are you actually going to get the responses on that? So my questions will depend different how you respond on that.
We are following the structure that we have for IFRS 8 on the
Gary wasn't here. It's actually a formal document.
Yeah.
It's like an ED, but it's actually called a request for information. And so we actually publicly announce it, and it's we have a comment period of 120 days and so on. So it's treated like a formal consultation.
They did several of these on the other side of the pond. It was formal interviews, and it was then, an hour and a half with the staff or something.
The main vehicle is this formal request for information document that we put out. Now, in addition to that, certainly our experience last time around with segments, and I expect that we would follow a similar pattern this time. We've worked with national standard setters, plus also EFRAG were quite significantly involved last time as well in setting up public meetings in various jurisdictions to sort of generate feedback that those national standard setters and or EFRAG could then feed into us through comment letters. We participated either in person or by phone or video with many of those public meetings as well, so that we could hear firsthand comments that were being raised. So there's that dimension to it as well.
I got it.
And then there'll be other things in terms of users as well, some specific outreach to users and user groups as well.
I have a question about
that. Oh, sure.
that was not the answer I expected. I thought it was going to be interviews or something, but that's okay. But these are the right questions and themes, I think, to be pounded on again. In the, my prior life, I probably went through 40 or 50 acquisitions under the new sets of joint rules, and every one of these can be a challenge. I think what I would suggest you would add under, I guess it's question five, for non-amortization and testing of goodwill. One thing that happens is when a company buys somebody with signed goodwill, it's easy early on. But companies are dynamic, and you're always shifting your operations. And over time, goodwill and the operations that associate with might go in different directions as you're constantly reorganizing. And what downstream problems does that cause in terms of allocating goodwill and testing it for recovery? As again, as we say, companies are dynamic operations and things change. And after several years, sometimes it's very difficult to associate the originally acquired goodwill with the underlying operations. So I think that's a very, in operational life is a very important issue, and I actually suggest you ask that, the intersection of testing that versus segments versus change over time.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, you did a very good job of finding, you know, in finding all kind of areas, questions.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for your efforts. But I'd like to just recommend maybe rather than areas of questions, maybe type of evidence we want to receive. So if possible, we want to ask the actual data, quantitative data of maybe on each question, just that description of qualitative descriptions might not be good. So I would like to add, if possible, if they don't have any experiences, but if they do have experience, please give us some example on specific questions. Maybe for example, in a good case, you know, maybe there we can do amortization and impairment. That's previous model, but we suggest a new model, no amortization, just only impairment. So in that case, maybe, you know, people in the market, they can provide some kind of actual evidence. Maybe just the assets are likely to be overstated. So maybe they're just distorting their maybe financial position compared. We expected, in theoretically, you know, we expected this is the right model, but in markets they are using our principle in a maybe some different way. But if we get a more accurate data, then we can get a more get to the good conclusion. But otherwise, we keep continuing debating. Logical this model is much better. With the only impairment only model rather than systematic amortization model plus the impairment. So if they want change or they want to give us some kind of persuasive evidence, then they might give us some actual evidence, then we can have a change or amend that current requirement. That's what I'm asking.
Mm-hmm.
To make a question.
Mm-hmm. And I think the request for information of IFRS 8 actually encapsulated the questions that were going to come underneath with such a sentence that said, if you provide us, we would appreciate if you provide us examples that illustrate what you are. Yeah.
Doc?
I totally agree with what Changu said. Evidence is very important. But my question is relatively, process. You have a 13A paper. And 13B paper. I struggled with the interaction between 13A and 13B. So in your paper, basically, your question will be made based on 13B. But you have a lot of analysis in the 13A, which is quite long, and it contains a lot of issues.
Mm.
But not all the issues were reflected to 13B.
Mm-hmm.
My question is will the constituents have a chance to have a look at the, paper like 13A?
Mm.
Because in 13A, there are some questions which was raised in IFRIC long time ago, and that is about impairment test on NCI put, and not put, NCI. And at that time, I was in the IFRIC. And then we leave it to the post-implementation review. And it was written in 13A, but not well reflected in 13B. So if the constituent gets only 13B, then what happened to the question? So could you give me the idea?
Mm-hmm. Yes, one idea that we were considering is to footnote this paper in the request for information so that the constituent wants to have a support and further information, they can click on this link and then have access to these papers. Another approach could be to have an appendix to the request for information, and if constituents wants to have more information on a specific matter, they can go just to the appendix. There might be other different ways, but we can do that.
Additionally, there were, we had Marielle in particular had a lot of meetings with a lot of people mm-hmm. to gather this input. And what we've tried to do with these questions is to gather together the sort of the main themes, the main areas.
Mm-hmm.
So you're quite right. The issue that you refer to, the impairment testing of goodwill, when you've not got the full goodwill, you've got the partial goodwill model, is an issue. And it was brought up by some of the people that we spoke to. Mm-hmm. I would see that as being addressed to a large extent by question 5, which is about the challenges of the impairment testing mm-hmm. When it comes to impairment testing of goodwill or indefinite life in intangibles. So we've not specifically drawn out that particular one, but I'd say that is an example of the sorts of challenges that we heard about mm-hmm. During the phase 1.
Okay. I'd like to spend just a minute on question 6 dealing with NCI. We know it was one of the contentious issues to the point that we had to create an option between two accounting possibilities. And I think this section dealing with NCI, the questions are a bit short or maybe too open-ended. For instance, I would have thought useful to know if the respondent is a preparer, what kind of accounting policy choice he made in dealing with NCI, i.e. Did he choose to fair value NCI for some or all or none of the NCI present in a business combination? And this is not asked as a question, so you have a very open question, how useful is it, but if you don't know what the preparer has chosen on a case-by-case basis, you cannot really assess from what perspective the respondent is answering the question. Also, there is another issue with NCI, and Alan will not be surprised that I raise it. The fact that NCI balances can become debit balances because you continue to allocate losses without any limit to the NCI. It was one big change in IAS 27, not IFRS 3, but a consequence of the accounting for NCI. So we don't ask any question about it. I think I would have asked a question as to whether the debit balance, if any, of NCI is useful information.
What would you propose to do?
I'm asking a question. We have introduced a change as compared to the previous accounting. Big change, in my opinion. To the point I dissented to this change.
Okay.
Well, for me, it's big. I had to dissent. I don't dissent very often. This one I had to dissent. And I think we should test whether this change creates any difficulty as any other on which we ask questions.
Any other comments? I just was a little bit worried about question 2. Sort of the basis of the question is, well, we used to do it this way, now we do it that way. What are the relative benefits of it? I just think it should be maybe more targeted to what are the benefits of what we're doing rather than what are the benefits of what we used to do. Just that.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Agreed.
I had one additional question. When we looked at IFRS 8, we were provided with a paper that summarized a lot of academic research that was done on IFRS 8. I was just curious whether or not you have something similar in the works for this project, because the one area that I found worthy of more in-depth research is this change of not advertising goodwill. It was a very contentious change, and at the time that I know Statement 141 and 142 were written in the United States, Wall Street put a fairly, you know, heavy press on the standard setters to say, you know, we've entered into this new age, this information age, and the notion that goodwill should be depreciated over a relatively short period of time is something that needs to be revisited. You know, you buy these knowledge-based companies, and in fact, the goodwill doesn't depreciate, it appreciates. Economic goodwill, I think, may in fact appreciate, but accounting goodwill is something separate and apart from that, in my opinion. And I'm not sure that case, although it was made in, you know, that's just the way the standard unfolded, has really been borne out, frankly. I'm just curious whether or not people examine that and whether or not we need to go back and revisit advertising accounting goodwill. Mm-hmm. So I'd be curious as to what research has been done in Asia's areas of church consolidation.
So we have started a preliminary review of the academic literature, and this is in paper 13A. This describes at a very high level the papers that we have found so far and the topics that those papers refer to, but we haven't got into the details of those papers, what were the conclusions reached, and we will do so in phase two of the post-implementation review. So we do have a flavor of which have been the main areas where research has been done, but we haven't got into the details of each specific paper and thought about the conclusions reached by the different authors.
Appendix 1 from page 44 on paper 13A has a list of the papers that have been identified so far that will be looked at during phase 2.
Okay. Mariella, just on the question for the topic under 4, some jurisdictions have taken a quite a serious view about negative goodwill, and do you intend that to be part of the question 4? Is it kind of goodwill is an all-encompassing, or do you think you need to separately identify negative goodwill, or is it? So I know there is other questions, but this is exercising quite a bit. And as David Tweedy used to say in several forums, that it was a very contentious and he never supported it, but for the sake of convergence, he let it go. Mm-hmm. But negative goodwill is definitely an area which has a lot of attention.
Good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Seems to be quite a bit of abuse.
Okay, I think Mariella, you have enough feedback.
Yes, if there's anything else that the board wants to.
Anything more for the wish list?
Take time off.
So what we are aiming to bring in the next month is a revised version of this question. These questions will be the key part of the request for information. The request for information has an introduction to the review, to the project, but the key part of this request for information are going to be the questions. So we're going to redraft those questions and bring them back to you in December. And we are planning to publish the document by the end of January, max early February, and leave 120 days of a comment period. And then from there, then we will get back to you on what we are trying to do in the second phase and things are going in the outreach during that phase.
Good. Okay. Thank you, Mariella. Good work.
Thank you.